comes in, and a lot of this is still items to be determined, but they are definitely some issues that are coming our way in the future. There's been a lot of activity lately in the world of U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Right now, Texas has a 65 listed endangered or threatened species for animals, 28 plants, and 21 candidates. These are all three in the Brazos River Basin. Just a brief bit of background for the federal listing process. Traditionally, it's been a 2.5-year process just to get something through their review process, determine if it's warranted or not, and on the list. Citizen petitions are the most common way to do this. Citizens' petitions don't have to be very strong as far as having scientific backup behind it. You can write in a letter. I went out. I didn't see the Brazos River water snake today. I think you need to look at it and see if it's endangered or declining. One drawback to the rule. It doesn't. Sometimes there is good support and good reason, and sometimes it's as little as that when you actually see the petition. And lawsuits have become the main tool, especially of the very strong environmental lobbies, Center for Biodiversity, some of those sorts of groups, to force decisions. And then the unfortunate thing is you've got to go through the same difficult process for a delisting. You've got to petition it. It's got to go through a 2.5 generally review process.
Even more difficult.
Yeah, actually, it's even more difficult because you usually have to. But does it take in a dearth of information or data to get something listed? It takes about 5 times that or more to get something.
We're working on getting those delisted.
Yeah, you've got to. Proof is far more on the person wanting the delisting than the one on the listing that it is truly in peril. 5 factors they look at for listing, and I'm going through this because there is some action coming our way. Present or threatened destruction, modification, curtailment of the range or habitat, overuse of the species for commercial, recreational, scientific, educational. That's kind of what the alligators were. Louisiana overhunting was the primary problem. Disease or predation that may be affecting the overall survival, inadequate existing regulatory mechanisms, or some other natural man-made factors affecting species' continued existence. Like I said, citizen review, most common way that something gets looked at. Every once in a while, they'll pick up something on their own, but it's usually some sort of petition from outside. 90-day review, they give it just a brief cursory review. Is it warranted to go forward and look further or not? If no, they publish it in the Federal Register. We looked at it. We're not doing anything else. Yes, it goes to their 12-month review step process where they put it in the Federal Register, try to solicit all the information they can, and we'll come out with a decision of either it doesn't warrant it, and they'll publish that and it goes away, or it does warrant listing and it goes to the next step in creating critical habitat and protections. Or they have a candidate species list that they call, means we think it's endangered, it warrants some protection, but we don't have time and resources to do it right now, and there's other species we think that are more at risk than this one at the moment for extinction or significant decline. Those are just a few rough definitions. Endangered, significantly imperiled, threatened, we're worried about it. And candidate, we think it deserves listing, but we're out of money and time. Once you're a candidate species, and this is where a lot of change is fixing to happen, they do an annual review. Usually they're pretty thin. Is there any more new data? And unless someone's out there actively trying to get it delisted, there's usually not data. And then they'll come out with a priority number. At this time, they can occasionally, I haven't seen it happen a lot, recommend that something come off the list. But that's, again, usually only if someone's done an extensive amount of work and submitted it. They'll give it a priority number. One is it's the highest priority. As soon as they get something else dealt with, one of those is going to kick up. 12, it's not very high priority, or the threat is not immediate. Those are just some of the things in our basin, the ones that are already endangered. There's a lot of activity on the Houston toad. Sounds like y'all are going after the Navasota ladies' tresses. I've heard scuttle on Golden Sheep Warbler and Black Cat Vireo too. I know some of the other those who think they've got good information to prove they're more prevalent either than they were or they were thought. But there were some things, the Concho River water snake was listed for years, and then they finally went out and actually looked for them, and they were everywhere. So things like that. Candidates on the list right now, small ag sharp-nosed shiner, been on the list since 2004. Three salamanders, I think, went on in 2006. Smooth pimpleback and Texas fawn's foot are mussels, freshwater mussels. They just went on the candidate list this past December.
I was involved in this a while back when I was in the Army with the golden cheek warbler and the black cat vireo and the impact of cattle grazing. All of a sudden, I don't see anything on the black cat vireo anymore at Fort Hood. Do you have any idea? Didn't they have any, or did we kill them all, or what?
No, they had some, and Fort Hood was doing quite a bit. I don't
know.
Oh,
I know, but I mean, right now, Fort Hood's only worried about the golden cheek warbler. They don't seem to be worried about the black cat vireo anymore.
Fort Hood's still monitoring black cat vireos and golden cheek warblers.
Are they? Okay.
Still patrolling cowbirds.
Still killing cowbirds is what we were doing.
Yeah, they're still killing cowbirds.
Yeah, okay.
Also.
All right.
Status is good with them, both golden cheek and black cat vireo. And they'll probably keep monitoring those populations in the foreseeable future.
We had some,
no great big fires again or anything like that. It looks like that population.
We had somebody chasing cowbirds around with radio telemetry for 6 days a week. I mean, and I suppose that's still going on.
No, not telemetry. They're doing snake telemetry.
I always expected at some point some cowbird enthusiast would be take exception to all the cowbirds we were killing.
For every action, there's an equal and opposite. September 9th, 2011, U.S. Fish and Wildlife had been enrolled in some long-term lawsuits with the Center for Biodiversity and another group, Wild Earth Guardians, who felt that U.S. Fish and Wildlife wasn't doing enough to protect candidate species, wasn't doing enough to address petitions. After a lengthy lawsuit and a settlement, USGS, or Fish and Wildlife, sorry, agreed to a work plan with the groups as part of a settlement. It's a multi-year work plan over a six-year period. They are going to review and address 250 species on the 2010 candidate list. That's a whole lot of species in a very short time. I understand they are spread out across the country. Personally have serious doubts about the quality of those reviews, so if you're concerned about anything, I'd certainly watch and stay involved. And they will go through those 250, determine if they should be elevated to endangered or if it doesn't, no longer needs protection, doesn't issue a warm decision. There were some critters in there that were specified that they must go to the point of developing critical habitat for. If they decide to list, at the time they list, they must have critical habitat designated. Traditionally, they'll list and then spend a couple years trying to develop the critical habitat. And so all that's going to go on. Now, those first five candidates in our basin are on that 2010 candidate list. And the salamander specifically, the Jollyville salamander, was in this specified group that must have critical habitat. Don't know exactly what they're going to do. It lives in an aquifer other than say the aquifer is critical habitat. But right now, of that 250, there's 43 that live in Texas that were on that list. If all those are listed, it's going to represent a 46% increase to the number of listed species in Texas. Critical habitat, geographic area central for the species. Doesn't necessarily have to be an area where the species currently lives. It may just have the characteristics that it needs. However, it does have to go through the public comment process, so that is a good thing, and that's probably where there may need to be some effort. Trends overall that we're seeing, Fish and Wildlife is coming under extreme political pressure to list species, like I said, may or may not always be warranted with their petitions. Seems to be a great bit of uncertainty going forward. One of the big focuses they were looking at was water-dependent species seems to be a big one coming forward. And then looking at groups like those salamanders, there were several in the Colorado too, Edwards aquifer-related critters. Freshwater mussels, actually the petitions, I'm going to talk a little more about the mussels coming forward. There was initially the petition was for 13 or 16 Texas mussels. Fish and Wildlife at that point cut it to 5 because that's what they had the time and effort to deal with. And then there was another huge petition on fish out in West Texas. Our two shiners, like I said, were on that candidate review list included in the settlement, but I did not see them specifically called out as one to develop critical habitat. So they'll have to, they did go ahead and do a candidate review for them, said warranted, listing was still warranted, gave them a priority number of 5, but said the threat was non-imminent because the most significant threat was reservoir building, and they did not think, in their opinion, that it was any reservoirs in the area were likely to occur anytime soon. So they're just kind of hanging out there in limbo a little bit. Drought almost got them this year, but we got rain. They appear to be doing okay. Some of y'all may have seen the news reports. Parks and Wildlife did go catch a bunch and move them to a fish hatchery to try to keep them going in a pond just in case the rivers dried up, which was getting really close to in some of the areas. And I think there is a plan at some point to transfer those guys back to the the threats they have listed, however, impoundments. It's in a dry part of the state where they live. There's going to be any population growth up there, they're probably going to need more reservoirs to supply water. Irrigation, also an issue. It is or has been cotton country in the past, and we're seeing a lot of migration of dairies and feedlots in that up to that area because there is less runoff, less issues like you see in the Bosque. Those may be an issue. Also up there, the groundwater tends to be salty, as is the river. So if you are going to use that water for drinking water, you're going to have to do desalination, and that brine's got to go somewhere back in the river. May or may not be very good for those guys. And then invasive species. Salt cedar sucking a lot of the water out of the river, and golden algae blooms on occasion. And if they come in contact with it, it's probably going to kill them. We do have stable reproducing populations north of Possum Kingdom in the river has been eliminated, or the sharp nose from the Wichita River, which it used to live in the red, can on occasion be caught in the lower Brazos, but it's really rare. Kurt Weinmiller from A&M, they've caught a few. Small eye hadn't been seen down there since 1986. Traditionally, it did run all the way from the lower to the upper. They are vulnerable, like I said, to some catastrophic events like drought. Don't expect them to, I don't expect them to develop critical habitat anytime soon. I think I copied and pasted a slide at the wrong spot. 5 Central Texas mussels went through review. 2 of those species are known to have living populations in the Brazos, the smooth pimpleback and the fawn's foot. Smooth pimpleback, given a listing priority number of 8, we're pretty good on those. We've got a lot of them. They seem to be healthy. However, they are in decline in other river basins in the state. Texas fawn's foot was a 2, so that one's pretty high. He could move to critical habitat and stuff once they get through with their settlement. Their biggest threats have been habitat modification, point-on-point source pollution, and then again, they're subject to invasive species impacts. Kind of just some generics. Why care? They are indicators of healthy ecosystems if the mussels are doing good because they are somewhat sensitive. Generally, everything else is doing okay, too. They are filter feeders, help clean the water. And traditionally, they have some cultural value as far as people used to make their living off of it. Indians cultivated shells for jewelry. smooth pimpleback. Some recent studies found them throughout the lower Brazos, Navasota, Leon, Yewa, San Saba basins. In there, actually, the recent surveys found it's in greater abundance than anyone ever thought. That's another one of those cases, I think, where some of it, no one was really looking. I know we certainly didn't when we did our sampling. We're learning to look now, but we didn't. However, it has been, or as far as we can tell, eliminated from the upper Brazos. No one has reported it in many, many years. But again, I don't know how many people were looking. And these are the counties where it's known to be found in brown. And then the crosshatched area was its known historic occurrence. One thing they did look at that was real good on the part of Fish and Wildlife, historical mussel identifications have been poor. They found like the UT collection, about 49% of it was misidentified. But that's because the descriptions and understandings of mussel biology historically, it's much better now than it was in the 50s or 40s. Fawn's Foot, this is the one in the most peril. Its rain has declined. Recent surveys found where it was, San Saba and the Brazos, and that's kind of the upper Brazos north of PK. I think they found maybe in the Clear Fork. It appears to be stable and reproducing where it's at, but it's two spots, and that's it. They found one or two here or there, but nothing that would resemble a population or a significant number. There's kind of the known locations where it has been found in the past in its historic range that it's believed. Don't think they're going to move on the mussels till probably fiscal year 2017, because they've got to address all those things in those two settlements with the two groups. Critical habitat is the real concern there and what will happen. Like I said, just because it isn't living there right now doesn't necessarily mean it could be critical habitat. So it would be possible, I don't think likely, but possible, they could do that entire crosshatched area as critical habitat. I don't think that'll happen. Usually, from what I've seen, there are some endangered mussels in Georgia, Florida. Seems to be they protect the living populations, or if they follow what they've done in the other states. I have heard, however, that they have been tossing around flow requirements, very similar to our in-stream flow type thing. How they're going to do that and have it be scientifically defensible, I'm not real sure. They know a certain amount of flow will scour out the beds, and the amounts of flow that carry enough to maybe cover one upper bed. But as far as doing, just like I said this morning, knowing that the flathead catfish needs 3,600 CFS of flow in May to reproduce, that data doesn't exist for mussels either. So how they get much more as far as making flow requirements, things other than maybe if you're downstream of a dam and we're in a bad drought, you've got to release subsistence flow enough to keep the bed covered, something beyond that, I don't know. But that could have some water use implications coming forward. Talking to the folks in Georgia who've been dealing with it longer than we have, they said it has stopped one dam construction project, but they said that project was so fraught with political discourse before it ever even got to the mussel issue. There were some things not done right with property acquisitions and stuff like that. He didn't think the mussels, they may have been the final blow, but the project was already in its death throes. But he said it's messed with his biggest impacts have been on bridge construction. Bridge construction has apparently, prices have skyrocketed because they've got to figure out ways not to disturb the stream bed in those areas that are critical habitat. So they're either having to design big span bridges or pay to have people come in, move the mussel beds, protect them, and then put them back once the bridge is done, all sorts of stuff. They said it's been a nightmare for their Department of Transportation. Salamanders. Not real sure, like I said, what exactly is going to go on there. They are on, or like I said, the Jollyville one at least was on that specified list where they've got to do, propose elevating it to endangered species or make the decision to take it off and then do a critical habitat designation, or they have to come back with a finding that's not substantial, take it off. those, that Jollyville Salamander was on their schedule for 2012. So sometime this year, there may or may not be a decision. Should be published in the Federal Register, and that may give us an idea on where they're going to go with the rest of the salamanders. Don't really know what they'll do with that as far as if they do it and do critical habitat, if that's going to involve aquifer levels, things like that. I've heard a lot of rumblings that, you know, it is in the aquifer. There really isn't a good way to know how many of them are down there. Has anyone done the work to see if they're all the same thing just because they found one in Georgetown and one in Salado and one in Jollyville and one in Barton Springs? I know there's been some recent work out of TIER that they looked at the Brazos River water snake and the Concho River water snake, and genetically they're the same critter. They just live in two different spots. So I've heard some rumblings from the anti-group who's, I guess, already probably trying to prepare their defense if it does get listed or it does start to impact groundwater levels. That's what they're rumbling. But those are good questions that haven't been answered. And here's some websites if you want to try to keep an eye on it yourself or track them. Fish and Wildlife isn't that great on keeping you up to date. You've got to go watch them. Watch the Federal Registers, check their websites. I asked if there were list servers that they'd send out when they were fixing to make them. TCQ will do that. If you're interested in water permits in a certain area, you sign up and they'll send you an email when something's going on. No. Zebra mussels, I don't know how much y'all have heard, but we about zebra mussels, but we now have them in Texas. They are a non-native species. This is a complete flip from the mussels I was just talking about that are good things to non-native invasive species. They multiply quickly. One mussel can produce up to 1 million offspring a year. Their veligers, which are basically the baby mussels, are microscopic. Currently in the areas already impacted, they're spending millions to try to control. The impacts are clogged water intake structures. They've interfered with dam gates in areas. They can have a dramatic impact in a reservoir situation. Like the others, they're filter feeders, but they're so prolific, they can filter out and reduce the nutrients to the point that it starts to reduce primary productivity, which then hurts fish populations. They can do damage to other aquatic animals. They sunk navigational buoys, damaged docks. It's a water system pipe that's clogged with them. That is a poor lobster that they have attached to and grown on. Came over from Russia is the theory, and cargo ships hit Lake St. Clair in 1988. Just to show you how easy it is to transport them and for them to spread, by 1991 all five of the Great Lakes had them. Hit Lake Texoma in 2009. Will most likely spread fairly rapidly through the Red and the Trinities because they are so interconnected with water pipelines. And are most likely going to spread throughout the state. I know we're kind of bracing, and our engineers have already looked at tentative control strategies and stuff for when they come our way, how to clean and keep the dams maintenance, how to do the water intake structures or the effluent pipes, keep them from getting in there. It's already caused a pretty good water war north of the Metroplex. Corps of Engineers, once they found them, told the North Texas Municipal Water District, they could not pump water or utilize their water right from Lake Texoma because they were releasing it into Lake Levan, and they didn't want to transfer the mussels through the pipeline. And so they were, not only were we already in a bad drought, and they had their knees cut out from underneath them by losing half of their permitted water or contracted waters, still not resolved. They're trying to look at different ways to build pipelines or bypass the lake if they can take their pipeline directly to their water treatment plant, that sort of thing. But it's been a big mess up there for them, and I suspect it's just going to continue. This is kind of the march across the country. Started up here, all the way down. Those are the red ones are where they have strong established populations, and then the yellow, they've collected them. You see, I'm not sure how accurate some of this is, but that's Lake Texoma. There were some, I believe the pipeline from The municipal water district went from Texoma down in this way into Levon. They found them in the little creek it discharged into before it went to the lake. They've been trying to clean the creek and get them out of there, but that's the water pathway that's been halted because people don't want them to spread. They're so easy to spread by boat, and if you look, Possum Kingdom, Granbury, we're not that far. All it takes is one irresponsible boater.
What's that viewer? Is that a USGS viewer?
Uh-huh. Things that can be done to prevent the spread. Parks has done a pretty aggressive public awareness campaign, especially up in the Metroplex area. Key things, boaters, fishermen, water skiers, jet skiers, got to clean and dry your boats before you move them between watersheds. Clean any bait buckets. And if someone individually wants to become involved, there is the park-sponsored Texas Mussel Watch program where if you see mussels, you can collect shells or turn them in, but they're also getting involved in kind of trying to keep an eye on the zebra mussels and their spread. And then I have just information if you wanted some more about that, but that's probably going to become a pretty good water supply issue in the future.
What kind of problems have they had at Texoma?
Texoma, they hadn't really had any problems yet.
They just know they're there.
They know they're there. They found them. I'm not aware that they've had any, but actually, I think it was that pipeline was starting to display decreased flows, and when they went in and looked, that's how they found them. I think they were thinking it was just salted up, because we'll see that at Granbury sometimes, because their water is saline like ours, is you'll get caking on the inside of it, and it was the divers came out with mussels, and then they started looking some more and went, uh-oh. And so they've been on a pretty steady march. And from what I can tell, a lot of these other states, though, have tried to do boater awareness. I even found Colorado. There was one little area with their lake where they basically had their lake rangers inspecting boats going in and going out. But they still seem to move pretty rapidly. So.
When the market stopped, it's hard.
Yeah, I mean, you could. Someone who does everything right, pulls all the mud, washes their boat, lets it dry, and still might not know if you've got them on there or not because they are so small. But it's definitely us. We've heard a lot of things today that demonstrate the importance of water, but also the fact water is becoming a more costly commodity. This is just going to be another one of them. Yeah. So I was last, so unless there's no more questions, I think we're done and y'all are free to run away.
How do we get copies of the slides?
We'll have them on our webpage.
Yeah, I'll put them on the webpage, and I'll go ahead and send all y'all an email letting you know that you've got them out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you. That was very good.
Mr. Gates.